Welcome back, everyone, to today's installment of Heather Reads, the podcast. I am Heather, your host, and today we saddle up for adventure with a selection from Harlequin's Special Edition series. Today we are looking at She Dreamed of a Cowboy by Joanna Sims. It was published on February 23rd, 2021, and it is the 14th installment of the Brands of Montana series. I've not read any of the others in this series, and to be perfectly honest, I wasn't fully aware that it wasn't a standalone novel until I did a little research on the author. Joanna Sims has been publishing with Harlequin since about 2012. Her profile on fantasticfiction.com says she writes exclusively for the Special Edition collection, and the brand seemed to be her main bread and butter. While I was reading this book, several clues were laid out to me that this was not the only book of hers that features this particular ranch and family. So when I looked up her information, I was pretty surprised at how many books there were in this series. And props to the author, since I didn't need to read any of the other books in order to understand what was going on. Lots of family members and previous protagonists make cameos, which I am sure is a treat for longtime readers, but not once did I feel lost in an already established universe. I've come across a few romance series that follow this format, so I'm wondering how ubiquitous this trend is. This is in stark contrast to some of my favorite fantasy series, where it's hard to follow everything if you pick up the story in the middle installment, rather than starting at the very first. But this is probably by design, since it might prevent Harlequin attracting new readers like myself, who might not want to slog through a giant backlog spanning nearly a decade. As far as the Special Edition collection goes, well, I'm not sure what Harlequin actually means by that. Blue seems to be the predominant color theme among other entries versus the red of the Presents collection, but other than that, nothing seems to stand out that would earn a Special Edition stamp. The back of the cover describes itself as believe in love, overcome obstacles, find happiness. Not to mention the category is stamped as life and love over the SKU. I wonder if Special Edition meant something else in times past, and this particular genre of romance became its dominant feature. I know I'm going on about this, but to me, the words Special Edition elicits something different in my mind, like a special gift that came with the book, or an exclusive interview or poster that you could only find in this round of printing. Or perhaps these are printed during certain times of the year, you know, like Christmas. I know there's a huge Christmas romance following, and not just with books. I can see a whole gaggle of these books getting trotted out with special covers just in time for the turkey to finish cooking on Thanksgiving. And, speaking of covers, this one was pretty much the entire reason I picked up this book out of all the others. Without going too far into it, I was your stereotypical horse girl growing up. Alongside all those magic and fantasy books were horse girl books with more than a few unicorn books to fill out the collection. Heartland, Unicorns of Balinor, the Thoroughbred series, Missy of Chincoteague, I read them all. So when I stumbled across She Dreamed of a Cowboy, there was absolutely no question about it. Unlike what most might expect from a romance book, there isn't a single man anywhere on this cover. Instead, there is a woman with short blonde hair, a blue flannel shirt, and a Western-style hat leaning over the neck of what we equestrians would call a flea-bitten gray horse as she's riding from the saddle. It covers the entirety of this cover, unlike the small illustration on the last book we read. I will note that the horse's tack seems to be more of the English variety, which is what I ride, than the Western tack you'd expect a cow, pony, or ranch horse to be sporting. I can't see the saddle very well, since that's near about where the illustration cuts off, but it looks far too small to be a Western saddle. But that's just a nitpick, really. Only folks who ride or are horse crazy like myself would be likely to notice. Underneath the title and author's name is the byline, "She's finally pursuing her bucket list, with full ellipses and everything." So we already have a clue that something is amiss with our protagonist. So let's get started. Our story begins with Skylar Sinclair as she shows off her new wig to her father, Chester, in preparation for her trip to Bozeman, Montana. Skylar is a cancer survivor, you see, of a particularly rare form of lung cancer that required not only chemo, but surgery as well. So she's had a rather tough time of it. This trip to Montana was a goal for her once she was declared cancer-free and would allow her to start approaching life with gusto again. But this isn't just any basic weekend trip. Oh no. This is a full summer at Sugar Creek Ranch, home of our hero, Hunter Brand. The hook of this particular book is that Hunter is a former reality show star on a program called Cowboy Up, and Skylar crushed on Hunter like the teenage fangirl she was. Their ages aren't mentioned, but I'm guessing from their interactions that they're pretty close age-wise. Now, when I started work on this podcast, I expressly went in with the intention of not mentioning the pandemic or explaining that this was my quarantine project. I had an apparently unrealistic expectation because I considered these books to be escapist romance, and they wouldn't mention the virus either. However, She Dreamed of a Cowboy expressly mentions COVID by name several times, using it to explain certain actions by the characters. If it had been a one-and-done, oh, by the way, mention at the beginning, I wouldn't even touch on it. But it's not, and there's an interesting moment I'll get to later. I'll also piggyback that comment to answer the question of, how did a cancer patient manage to wrangle up the money for a private charter flight to Montana and spend the whole summer there? It was GoFundMe. Moving on. So Skylar lands at the airport in Bozeman, and I'm not sure what she was expecting when she made all her arrangements, but I am sure she was not expecting the one and only Hunter Brand to pick her up from the airport. She is thrilled, of course, but does exercise restraint and presents a professional demeanor. She is a customer service representative after all, so she's probably a pro at that exact thing. Unlike a steamier novel, we really don't get paragraph-long visual descriptions of our power couple, and it makes it feel so much more sincere in a way that the last book didn't. Instead of diving straight into the visual goods, we get a small window peek at the potential for a relationship that may bloom over time. Are you Skylar Sinclair? The woman gave a little start and then spun around with a laugh. It was a sweet, tinkling, joyous laugh that he immediately liked, in spite of his intention to dislike everything about her. Yes, Skylar looked up at him, the corner of her eyes crinkling with a smile. I am. For a split second that seemed like slow motion, their eyes met and held. Skylar was wearing a mask, which drew his attention wholly to her large, violet-blue eyes. Lovely, wide, expectant eyes that appeared to be completely without artifice. Then, those eyes widened with a flash of recognition. Hunter Brand. Skylar said his name with a breathiness that stroked his ego in just the right way. But while Skylar is inwardly squealing her heart out, Hunter is inwardly cringing, since he was very much not a fan of his time as a reality TV star. And so far, he doesn't seem to be much of a fan of Skylar either, at least the idea of her on his ranch. His top goal right now is to work her to the point that she'll quit within the week. I'm not sure why there are so many romances out there that start with a power couple on already not great terms. It just stresses me out, to be honest. But Skylar is thrilled at this opportunity to live and work at Sugar Creek, despite Hunter's hesitancy. He's apparently not been told that Skylar is a post-op cancer patient. His father, Jock, orchestrated the whole arrangement and neglected to pass on this tidbit of information. Skylar isn't ready to give up the ghost either, so to speak. So right now, all Hunter sees is a tourist from New York City who somehow managed to get Jock's blessing for the adventure. Now that we've established our two not-quite-yet lovebirds, we finally get a good look at Hunter when he takes off his mask, bandana. It's a romance after all, and we need something to work with.
Once outside, Hunter lowered the bandana and Skylar was able to see his entire handsome face. Yes, he had aged from his time on the show, and that age had done him good. The man had a beautifully chiseled jawline, a slight dimple in his chin, prominent cheekbones, and a perfectly straight, strong nose. Golden skin, jet black hair peeking out from beneath his well-worn cowboy hat, and just the deepest sapphire blue eyes. There wasn't any other word that she could think of to describe the grown-up Hunter Brand other than hunk.
Are we still using hunk? I thought the current term was snack? Shows what I know, I guess. On their drive to the ranch, Hunter begins Operation Eject Tourist by being a bit cold to Skylar, but he's not completely rude. Skylar, though, is living high on life and is nothing less than ecstatic to be in Montana. When they reach Sugar Creek, we get a bit of a tour of the ranch, and this is when I realized that there were a lot of these Brand boys hanging around, and it clicked for me that there were a few other books that I hadn't known existed. It does add a level of richness to our story, though, that it's not just a cardboard backdrop that our characters are dancing around. It is, in fact, one of the brothers, Liam, who offered up his currently unused cabin for Skylar to use while she's staying on the ranch. As Hunter helps get her settled into her cabin away from home, Skylar does privately wish that Hunter had been a bit warmer with his reception, but she brushes the feeling off as probably residual teenage dreaming. Personally, I think she's got a really healthy attitude about it. She takes a moment to realize her hurt feelings, adjust her expectations, and understands that she probably wouldn't have been hurt if she hadn't been a fangirl back in the day. As she's mulling over her thoughts, Hunter is all business. He shows her around the cabin and stable and introduces the two horses that were going to be under her charge while she's there. Speaking for myself, if someone told me that I would get to take care of a couple of horses, I'd probably be just as excited as Skylar. Her two new friends are Zodiac and Dreamcatcher, and if you ask me, these names are absolutely perfect in my humble and mushy opinion. And inside the stable is when Skylar gets her first taste of work at Sugar Creek Ranch. She and Hunter take care of a few barn chores and begin their professional relationship, even if the atmosphere is a bit tense. Now, here's where I start to raise a small eyebrow at Skylar. For someone who had idealized ranch life and had been a fan of the show that supposedly featured said ranch life, Skylar seems to be a bit in the dark about how all this is supposed to work. Hunter had told her that work begins before dawn, and she's still shocked when she's woken up by Hunter knocking at her door early in the dark of the morning. Apparently, she thought that he'd been kidding, but she does manage to bounce back. And I'm also wondering if her eager veracity made her bite off more than she could chew as far as physical work goes. I've never been a cancer patient, though I've known a few, but I don't think I'd be up for and ready for hard labor for a long while after surgery and chemo. Nevertheless, she takes every task Hunter throws at her, which is rather impressive, given that Hunter is deliberately trying to chase her off with exceptionally hard work. This would be a super huge dick move if he didn't know about her past diagnosis, but since he doesn't know, I'm just going to go ahead and downgrade him to just being a regular dick. In his defense, though, I could see why he'd be reluctant to have her on the farm. He does at one point state that they're not a dude ranch. But he gets the aforementioned dick judgment because Jock was expecting him to be a gracious host to Skylar and pretty much told him as such. But he does realize he might have gone a bit too far when he starts to notice how Skylar is struggling. He makes them a large breakfast after their morning chores and suggests that Skylar take the rest of the day to rest. Stubborn as she is, though, Skylar insists that she's good to keep going for the afternoon. Their next job is pulling a fence down, and this is about when Skylar is officially done with her wig. She yanks it off her head and stomps it into the dirt. I can only hope that it wasn't a custom wig, or at least an expensive one, because if it was, we gotta pour one out for the wig maker. It is not easy to make those.
Hunter, being the good down-home gentleman that he is, says absolutely nothing about it while working on the fence, until Skylar mentions that he hadn't said anything about it. Hunter pulls that old folks in these parts trope and tells her that if she wants to talk about it, then she'd do it in her own time. And finally, we start to see some ice thaw between them. She looked up at him, and once again, he was temporarily mesmerized by the goodness he saw in those wide, violet blue eyes. What he saw in those eyes was a heart of gold, a kind soul, and a woman who had seen more than her fair share of hardship. In that instant, he realized that he'd been wrong about her from the get-go. She wasn't a spoiled socialite playing dress-up. She was a woman on a mission to save her own life through the hard work and fresh air that could be found on a Montana ranch. Hunter figures it would be prudent for them to break for lunch, and as they eat, they discuss Skylar's history with cancer, and how she had wanted to feel normal when she arrived at the ranch, hence the wig. Like, look, I get it, Skylar, I really do. You show up to a new place, and you don't want to be treated any differently than if you hadn't just fought off lung cancer. But let's be real here. Trying to keep up with an experienced rancher as he throws highly physical and laborious tasks at you, while I'm assuming you're not working with optimal lung capacity, is a little stupid. No, I guess I'm being too harsh. I've probably read Fault in Our Stars one too many times. But Skylar is serious about not being treated any differently. Verbally, Hunter agrees, but I'm pretty sure he's throwing all of his plans to run her into the ground with work out the proverbial window. He decides to offer a trail ride once they're done with their lunch instead. He also finally gets her to spill the beans about how she knew about Sugar Creek Ranch, since he considers their operation rather far from the beaten path. Skylar admits to having seen Cowboy Up, and he's not really thrilled by the news. But Skylar reassures him that yes, she was a fan of his, but she isn't of the crazy stalker variety. I mean, that's exactly what a crazy stalker fangirl would say, but I digress. But I do like this bit, where Skylar has a vision realignment, so to speak. She suddenly realizes that Hunter didn't really like being a reality show star, and that she had been viewing him through the lens of a reality TV camera. Now she can finally start to see him as Hunter the person instead of Hunter the TV star. But she doesn't see much else after that, because as she attempts to stand up, she passes out. See, I told you it was stupid. I really don't know what she was expecting, honestly. If I had been in her shoes, I would have maybe started with an overnight nude ranch instead of an entire summer doing full-out ranch work. At any rate, if Hunter hadn't already felt bad about the way he had been treating Skylar, he sure feels like a proper tool now. He takes responsibility for being a jackass and gives her a proper apology, and gives her the rest of the day off, promising to start their next day at 7 in the morning instead. With all this sudden free time, Skylar decides to call her best friend Molly, and this is a part of the story that I really appreciate. Being incredibly far from home while she is somewhat delicate, it's reassuring that she has a friend she can talk to and process things as they develop. Unlike our last book, where the main gal had literally no support system whatsoever, Skylar has people she can call on that she trusts and who want to protect her. As Skylar gives her the play-by-play of her trip thus far, Molly is ecstatic that Skylar's host is none other than Hunter Brand. She teases her with the fantasy of starting a romance with Hunter, and Skylar brushes it off with a bit of a blush, but we, dear readers, know better. But it's in these interactions with Molly that help give this story its sincerity. Unlike that last plastic world filled with overreactive princes, everyone and everything feels so incredibly genuine. After Skylar's fainting episode, 4 days pass, and she hasn't been permitted to do much of anything, and she's getting a little antsy. So Hunter suggests that long-promised trail ride, and they go to saddle up the horses. Skylar has had some western riding experience from summer camps, I guess, and she's pleased that she remembers a lot of the motions needed to tack up a horse. On the ride, Hunter takes her all around the main ranch, And just like any tourist would be, Skylar is thrilled, again, over pretty much everything. Hunter was expecting this excitement, but what he didn't anticipate was his own shifted perspective. Skylar's fresh eyes opened up his own, so the ranch lands that he saw every day got a bit of the rose tint filtering through Skylar's eyes. But more than that, we're getting some of Hunter's inner monologue, and that's how we discover Hunter had been seeing, albeit casually, a woman from another ranching family. Interesting development. The end of the trail takes them to Oak Tree Hill, which is Hunter's own stake of Sugar Creek. He hasn't really done much with the place, certainly he hasn't even built a house to live in yet, but Skylar is enchanted all the same. As Skylar returns to the cabin to bask in her enchantment, Hunter decides to go and wade into the dark and dangerous waters of social media. We can make all the jokes we want, but let's be honest here. We've all met someone new and interesting, and the moment they were out of earshot, we shoved their name into the Facebook search bar to see what we could find. Hunter, having avoided social media of any kind after his stardom waned, had to make a whole brand new Instagram profile and everything. As he's searching, muttering his own jokes about internet stalkers, he finds her profile on Instagram. While he's flipping through pictures that detailed her struggle with cancer, he gets a call from a buddy of his, Chase. Chase immediately picks up that Hunter's completely changed his attitude towards Skylar, and all but demands to look her up as well to see what got the turnabout. Chase himself also starred on the show, but he's had a much harder time of it than Hunter. Chase's father pretty much ran their own ranch into the ground and has been struggling to keep things together ever since. We also get hashtag tragic backstory between the two men. Chase's girlfriend Sarah, who may as well have been a sister to Hunter, was diagnosed with brain cancer and had sadly passed away, leaving a hole in everyone's lives. Chase especially, as he was already dealing with finances back home. I'm not going to call this damage like I did with the last guy. Hunter is well adjusted, and his life isn't constantly derailed by the devastating loss of a dear friend. But it is clear that Skylar's presence is meant to help him in some way. He pretty much figures out that Jock had invited Skylar for that exact reason. I'm also going to point out that we are now 2 for 2 with male protagonists who have dead women in their pasts. Maybe I should keep a tally. A couple of weeks pass, and Skylar's been adjusting to ranch life fairly well, despite the disaster of her first day, and Hunter's adjusting to ranch life with Skylar. The entire Brand family had wanted her to feel welcomed, so they all quarantined for 2 weeks. That way they could have a big old cookout to get together. As Skylar's getting ready, she's video chatting with Molly, who is already making jokes about rom-coms. Skylar insists that the cookout is not a date, but Molly doesn't completely let up. But then we get a little twist. While Hunter had been showing Chase Skylar's Instagram, Chase had caught sight of Molly. With both Skylar and Molly's permission, Hunter relayed Molly's number to Chase. And while Molly herself is making jokes at Skylar's expense, Chase sends off a text. So now Molly is unexpectedly finding herself in the middle of a romance subplot. How intriguing. The cookout is a smashing success, of course. The Brand family all seem to adore Skylar, and she returns adoration in kind. The family made a ton of food, all the kids played with her, and she even gets a welcome gift from Hunter's mother. It's all very cute, and I'm not sure if I'm gushing about it because I genuinely like it, or because I am very far away from my family and I'm only halfway vaccinated and I miss the people I love and my dad's cooking. I'm fine, yeah. Anyway, when they get back to work, Skylar keeps her work ethic up, and today she and Hunter get to deworm the cows. Exciting. After a rather amusing conversation about buying cow sperm and cleanup bowls, they don't waste any time. Just after they finish up, though, Skylar gets knocked down by one of the calves and lands square in the mud and manure. She throws a mild tantrum about the mess, which, again, I'm surprised by. I expected laughter or something other than anger. You're working at a ranch with livestock, falling over into cow mess pretty much
much comes with the territory. Maybe I've got a different perspective than some other folks. I've spent a lot of time with lots of animals, including cows in my school's agriculture program. Getting covered in horse and cow manure is not the worst thing that ever happened to me. Heck, I consider a day where I might end up as such a good day. Maybe my priorities are slightly misaligned. But clearly, Skylar is not as thrilled, so Hunter hoses her off, and we finally get a good excuse to ogle at him when he gives Skylar his shirt. Hunter tugged his shirt tail loose from his jeans and began to unbutton his shirt. The first couple of buttons exposed the smooth skin of his chest, which was a couple of shades lighter than the skin at his neck, and then the next buttons revealed the top of his six-pack abs. The man must do sit-ups in his spare time, or something, she thought to herself, before she realized, too late, that she was blatantly staring at him while he undressed. It's not sit-ups, Skylar. Homeboy burns calories like a train burns coal, throwing hay bales around and wrangling cows. Another consequence of the mud splat is the unfortunate ruination of Skylar's poor hat, having been squished by one of the cows. This gives us an excuse to head into town to get her a new one, and we get to meet Brandy. Brandy was the so-called casual girlfriend that Hunter's been talking to. She's home from graduate school and had been working at the local tack shop. She just so happened to be working the counter when Hunter and Skylar roll up. This is a special moment where I would like to applaud the author, because she has proven herself an expert in the cardinal rule of writing, show, don't tell. Anyone who's taken a fiction writing course will know how important show, don't tell is. For example, if an author just tells us, and then the house burned down, well, it just doesn't hold much impact, and while factual, it's not informative. But if the author takes time to set the scene, things change. What color is that fire? What could we see burning inside? What does it smell like? Who is watching it burn, and what expressions are on their faces? Our reader is going to be captivated, intrigued, and hopefully walk away satisfied with what had transpired on the page. Show, don't tell, coupled with what I consider the second holy rule, trust your reader, has the potential to say so much more than what is actually said. And Joanna Sims did exactly that when she introduced our new character with Brandy, her shiny brunette hair worn long and loose, framing her face made a beeline for him. She wasn't wearing a mask. Brandy's been mentioned before this moment, and we've had a couple of basic descriptions, but none had given a teaspoon's worth of information compared to the well that we had gotten in that one line. Brandy might seem nice at first glance, and she's already been described as sweet, but in that one line, we are shown that she is, at best, a careless individual, or at worst, a rather selfish person. More information is given to us from body language and dialogue. Not once are we told, Brandy is behaving selfishly and territorially over Hunter. It is fantastic, and I tip my hat to Miss Sims. During all of this, we can see that Skylar picks up what Brandy is transmitting through her mean girl powers, and to Hunter's credit, he knew exactly what was happening while Brandy was draping herself all over him. But even though he could see the effect it was having on Skylar, he doesn't do much about it, and berates himself mentally for letting it happen and not knowing what he should do. When they get back to Sugar Creek, Skylar admits that she was hurt by Brandy's display, but she's not exactly sure why. And I'm just sitting here excited that healthy communication is being presented to us. Hunter is pretty sure he knows why Skylar's upset, and this is the moment we've all been waiting for, the impassioned declaration of their feelings for each other. That may be an exaggeration, but it's pretty exciting anyway. They still aren't sure about the full extent of their feelings, but they know that feelings have been caught, and Hunter is sure willing to explore the possibilities. He even calls Brandy at that exact moment to tell her that it's not going to work out between them. See, kids,
This is exactly what happens when we sit down and discuss things like adults, instead of bottling up our emotions, waiting for them to catastrophically explode. This is so much better. The next day, or night rather, Hunter takes Skylar on their first proper date. Is it a fancy restaurant? A trendy bar? Tickets to a play? Nah. My manhunter knows how to woo a woman, so he takes Skylar on a moonlight trail ride. I won't lie, it sounds like heaven. The ride takes them to a trailer Hunter keeps at Oak Tree Hill while he's still contemplating on how to build on his land. They eat s'mores by the campfire, and Hunter starts to realize that Skylar is making him think of the future, of words like forever, and as much as that excites him, he needs a bit more woe than go right now. That's a direct quote, by the way. More woe than go. I might start using it myself. He talks about his thoughts. More excellent communication again. Very nice. And she agrees that taking it slow would be best. And this is some really good juxtaposition that they find themselves in. Hunter is at a huge crossroads right now. He always saw his life going one way, as in getting married to a Montana woman with ranching in her blood. But here comes Skylar, making him question every last bit of it. But Skylar has already passed her own major crossroad. She had plans laid out for her whole life, but they were all derailed when her mother died first, and then derailed again when she got cancer. Now she's coming to the end of her detour and getting ready to get back on track, returning to her normal life at the end of the summer. They're both walking into an unknown place, not sure where that path will ultimately end up. They spend that night sleeping under the stars, but the spell is abruptly broken the next morning when they find one of the horses, Zodiac, sick with cyanide poisoning from eating some fallen cherry tree leaves. They very carefully lead him back to the cabin, since he's too disoriented to get loaded into a horse trailer. Liam, the cabin owner, and who also happens to be a large animal veterinarian, comes over to check over Zodiac. But at this point, all they can really do is administer some B12 vitamins and hope. Yes, the romance is very nice and all, but gods help me if that horse dies. Hunter stays with Skylar in the cabin so he can nearby to help with Zodiac. With emotions pretty much all over the place and an uncomfortable couch being the only option to sleep on, Skylar insists they share the bed together. Hunter is still a perfect gentleman, of course, so he wants to give Skylar her space and tells her that he is intensely attracted to her and may or may not be a perfect gentleman if he joins her. He leaned down and touched his forehead to hers. I don't think you know what you want right now, Skylar, and that's okay. I don't want you to wake up with regrets. I just know that if I get into bed with you, I'm going to need to touch you. She's a big girl, Hunter. I think she can figure out her own wants just fine, thank you. She continues to insist, and he, of course, relents. It's a very slow burn love scene. Hunter takes his time. He doesn't push her or force her into anything, and she is enthusiastically into it. There's no apprehension, no fear, just two completely consenting adults sharing each other's company, closeness, and intimacy. He let her take her time with him, explore him, feel him, dominate him. And then, when she had taken him right to the edge of no return, Hunter stripped off her panties, kneeled down on the ground between her thighs, and turned her into a midnight snack. amusing use of imagery notwithstanding, it's a very tender night, especially considering they get two more rounds in after that. Another time skip, and we next find Skylar catching up with her friend Molly again. Molly just can't hold in her secret anymore, and confesses to being in love with Chase Rockwell. Absolute shocker, I did not see that coming. With this reveal, we get not just Skylar grilling Molly about the new romance, but also Hunter pushing Chase for details as well. Both are a tad concerned, considering that it came on extremely fast and only virtually, But for now, the two mains are cautiously supporting their friends. But just because everyone's been bit by the love bug, there's still work to be done on the ranch, and Skylar gets two more doses of down-home realism in the form of an ant nest and then with a torrential rainstorm. I mean, ranch work does tend to happen outside, where all the rain and the ants are. Still not sure why she's upset. She and Hunter have a small spat about this, but in the end, Skylar acknowledges that she's always had an idealistic idea of Montana. Hunter agrees and understands that she's being overwhelmed by the reality. But work still calls, and a big job is ahead of them by herding cattle across the pastures. I'm a little surprised that Hunter is letting Skylar help with this, to be honest. This is hard and dangerous work sometimes, and anything can happen. And a small something does happen. Skylar misjudges the height of a tree branch and falls off of Dreamcatcher. If you've never fallen off a horse, let me assure you, it hurts. I myself was granted the privilege only 2 weeks ago, and could not physically move for 3 days afterward. Skylar is lucky, though. She just fell when she only lost balance. I was thrown with my horse spooked. 0 out of 10, would not recommend. Wear your helmets, please. Hunter helps her feel better, at least emotionally, by regaling her with stories of his own falls from his younger days as they settle down for the night. Skylar is still filled with tenacity, of course, and isn't put off from riding or the work. They even take time after the job is done to ride up a nearby mountain, solely for the view. On their last night before heading back to the cabin, they share another moment of intimacy, and again, I'm just taken with how tender it is. The last book left a rather sour taste in my mouth, so this is a real palate cleanser. And relationships aren't just about physical intimacy, but emotional intimacy as well. Hunter opens up some more about his time on Cowboy Up, and also talks to her about Sarah and his suspicions for why his father arranged for Skylar to come to Sugar Creek. And while this is a good thing, being open about his emotions, Hunter believes that Jock thought Skylar could help Hunter fully get past Sarah's cancer and death. I'm a little hesitant on this one. Friendship and love can have healing qualities, for sure, but it's not fair to pin all of that responsibility on your spouse. There's a lot of pressure that Jock is putting on Skylar, who's a cancer patient herself. There's a lot of help out there that can help process grief, and it's not shameful at all to pursue it. On their way back to the cabin, they discuss Molly and Chase some more, and they reflect that they themselves also jumped pretty quickly into a relationship without a real exit strategy. Hunter finally bites the bullet and asks Skylar if she could see herself moving to Montana permanently. But before she can answer, her phone is now back in service range, and it is going off the hook. It turns out her father's had a stroke, and I kind of blanked out here. I have had that phone call. It is not a good phone call. Skylar now has to cut her time at the ranch short so that she can rush home to her father. She and Hunter share an emotional goodbye, and Skylar heads back to New York. It's a surprisingly hard transition when she realizes that Montana somehow felt like home, but it's not Montana. The bed, the wonderful mattress, felt like home to her. Her pillows, her blankets, her sheets. But the bed was lonely without Hunter. She missed his body making everything too hot. She missed fighting over the blanket, each accusing the other of being a blanket hog. She missed being able to curl up next to him, put her hand over his heart, and smell the wonderful scent of his skin. That night, as the sounds of the neighborhood kept her up instead of lulling her to sleep, Skylar wished she could get Scotty to beam Hunter right into her bed. No, that wasn't true. She wished that Scotty would beam her, her bed, back to Montana. Somewhere along the way, the real Montana, the one with the rabid ants, giant horseflies, mud, and manure, had begun to feel more like home than New York. She didn't know it before she left Sugar Creek, but she knew it now. Montana was Hunter's home, and for her, wherever Hunter was, that was home for her, too. On top of dealing with sudden homesickness, Skylar now has to deal with all the problems that popped up when her father had a stroke. He's looking to make a full recovery, but he can't operate his mechanic shop and garage in his condition. And they're not sure how his business can stay afloat without him. Skylar opens up to Molly about all her problems, and ever the optimist, Molly insists that things will turn out right. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Hunter is hard at work figuring out how to do exactly that. And one way of doing it is buying up Chase's ranch. How convenient. Poor Chase can now run off to New York worry-free to be with Molly. And now Hunter has a brand new ranch that he and Skylar could live in while he builds his own. Gosh, who could have foreseen that? As Hunter tells Skylar the exciting news over video chat, they finally start talking about the future for themselves. Skylar tells him flat out that if she picks up her life once her father's better to move to Montana, it's because he's put a ring on it. This, of course, prompts Hunter to propose on the spot, and Skylar, of course, accepts. But both do understand that nothing can move forward until her father recovers. One day, as Skylar is working on the business financials, who should turn up but Hunter? Turns out, Chase is getting ready to propose to Molly, and Hunter decided to take the excuse of celebration to visit Skylar. Many hugs are had by both. But still, who knows how long they might have together before they can see each other again. Gee, it sure is a shame that there isn't a good enough mechanic close enough to Skylar's family to help her father out. Oh, wait! Turns out Chase is just the guy for the job. He's an experienced and military-trained diesel mechanic, getting ready to marry Skylar's best friend. It's perfect. To top everything off, Chester and Hunter have a heart-to-heart, and Chester gives him the ring he had given to Skylar's mother. The story ends with Hunter and Skylar's marriage, and it's almost Shakespearean. I don't mean that it ended horribly with both lovers falling to fate's blade. I mean that everything was made perfect because everyone got married. Even Zodiac made a full recovery. All of her problems were solved and everyone is happy. And I honestly am really happy. This is what I would expect when I pick up a fluffy romance book, and that's not a bad thing. I certainly had my concerns after our last entry, but She Dreamed of a Cowboy has assured me that this ride won't be all rough riding. I know I've talked a lot about this already, but the story just feels so genuine in ways that I wasn't expecting. These characters feel so real and fleshed out that I wouldn't be surprised to find them out in Montana right this moment, herding cattle. I know Western and cowboy romances have a rabid fan base, and She Dreamed of a Cowboy is exactly up their alley. So let's not delay and get into Heather's final score. For the cover art, I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. I love the imagery of the girl leaning over the neck of a lovely-looking horse, and I would have given it a 5 out of 5 for the horse alone, but it loses points for the suspiciously not Western tack. I'm giving drama a 2 out of 5. Now, I'm not saying that this is a bad score. I am merely measuring the amount of drama to be found within the story. To be rather frank, the stakes in the story aren't terribly high, but that's all right. I think I might have gotten frustrated if certain situations had been tweaked in a more dramatic fashion and our characters were a bit more hot-headed. Romance is getting a pure 5 out of 5. I know this is a high bar to begin with, but I am absolutely giddy with excitement to find so much healthy communication between our two lovebirds. They talked out their problems with each other and did everything they could to keep reasonable expectations between them. And the chemistry between our leads is top-notch. The realism rating gets a 5 out of 5 as well. Originally, I was going to go for 4 out of 5, but that was probably because I was a tad salty. See, the events of the book hit a lot of the beats of my own life, and maybe a bit too close to home. Like Skylar, I've done time as a customer service representative, I've loved and lost people from cancer, and getting the news that my father had suffered a stroke while I was miles away from home was gut-punching. Not to mention, our story takes place in a world that also has COVID.
It was when that I got yeeted off a horse that I finally relented and upped the score to 5. I have to say, I truly enjoyed reading She Dreamed of a Cowboy, and I think lots of other folks would as well. For my final rating, I'm giving it 4 mask-wearing ranchers out of 5. That's all for today, dear listeners. I hope you had fun on this wild trail ride, and I hope you'll join me again for Heather Reads, the podcast. Like the show? Please visit us at heatherreads.com. That's HEATHERREADS.com. There you can also find links to the music you heard on our show today, provided by The Harpies. If you have any questions or just want to say hi, you can email us at podcast@heatherreads.com. And remember, it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.